As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell.
And I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
And welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. It's Wednesday, which means we'll be picking out some of the best work available on The Athletic right now and putting the author under the spotlight.
Non-fungible tokens, or NFTs, are exploding in popularity. They're being used by things like art, baseball cards, and even Jack Dorsey's first tweet.
The biggest companies in the world, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, all companies that don't have a product that you can hold but a digital product, and they are worth billions of dollars.
So they've got more money than they know what to do with, and this is kind of almost the latest kind of Rolex watch or Lamborghini thing. It's like, because I can, I've spent £50,000 on an NFT.
This week, we're going to highlight an article by The Athletic's investigations writer, Joey Durso, all about NFTs and why footballers are spending thousands on cartoon monkeys.
Yeah, so if you're like me and you've been trying to wrap your head around what on earth a non-fungible token actually is and why they're worth so much money, as well as the more serious concerns surrounding football and its growing connection with the crypto bros, we've got you covered this week. We're going to say hello to Joey in just a moment, but Flo, you get to a game this weekend, or did you have a game that was controversially postponed at the last minute, as is so en vogue at the moment?
I got to one game, but one game was postponed, I think semi-controversially. I was at Millwall on Saturday, which went ahead, but on Friday, the game that was meant to be on Sunday, which was Arsenal Women versus Reading, was postponed by request from Reading. And it was interesting because they've got a quite small squad and they don't have a massive budget, but they could obviously probably sign more players if they wanted to. Throughout the season, I have noticed that Reading have a lot of really young players on their bench. We're talking like 16-year-olds and you can't find any information about them, and a lot of them are making their league debuts. And their request was made because of a combination of injuries and COVID. And I think it is probably frustrating if you're an Arsenal team with a much bigger squad who could probably tap into playing a lot of their academy. You would say, well, you know, make it work, like, if you can, when I think the overwhelming thing wasn't necessarily COVID cases. And I think that's why, and what we're going to talk about with Charlie's article, it gets a little bit controversial.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get to the football at the weekend, but that's because my mate unbelievably organised his stag do on the same weekend as Aston Villa against Manchester United. Absolute disgrace. Yeah, I was really unhappy, to be honest. But I did enjoy myself, and Villa didn't lose, so that's always a good thing. Spurs correspondent Charlie Eccleshare has been writing about how Premier League COVID-19 postponements have turned a little bit toxic over the last week, so we'll come back to that one towards the end of the podcast. But do remember, you can sign up to The Athletic today for just £3.33 a month for 12 months. Just head to theathletic.com/footballpod and you will enjoy unrivaled sports writing as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts, including this one. And in case you haven't heard yet, a reminder that with the January transfer window open once again, The Athletic are recording daily transfer shows bringing you exclusive news and insight on all the big deals from the best newsroom in the industry. The only place you'll hear these podcasts is on The Athletic app, or by subscribing to The Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. So go ahead and start your free trial today if you haven't done so already. Right, let's welcome Joey onto the podcast, investigations reporter for The Athletic. I've been carrying out my own investigations, and honestly, I do not get this at all, like at all. I've read your article a couple of times now, and I'm still none the wiser as to what the point of all this is. Hopefully you'll be able to tell us.
You mean you wouldn't spend 40 grand on a cartoon monkey?
Probably not. Probably not at the moment.
Would you spend it if it was a cartoon monkey of Jack Grealish?
Well, not now, no.
Maybe now. last summer,
Coutinho.
Would you?
Philly Coutinho.
Yeah. I honestly can't get my head around it at all. Like what it's got to do with football. Why monkeys?
Joey, let's start at the beginning then for people that may have read the piece or not read the piece. I laughed when I saw the piece come on my Athletic homepage because I think we all saw around Christmas time, I think it was John Terry did the first sort of tweet about purchasing this for his wife or something.
And children.
And it was a picture of this cartoon monkey and it got sent to so many of my WhatsApp groups, so many people saying, this is weird, NFTs are weird, it's giving me bad vibes. And then so a few weeks later, I obviously see your piece and I think, oh my God, not the monkeys again, they're haunting me. But your piece starts with a reference to Reece James, obviously a Chelsea connection, and his tweet with another picture of a monkey. And the tweet says, I just acquired May C caps, number 10442 from my guy at Ishmilly at Bored Ape YC. Where are my apes at? Please tell us what the hell these apes are.
There's a lot to unpack there, isn't there? I mean, so an NFT is a non-fungible token, right? So basically, most people have heard of cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, and it's the same technology called blockchain technology. It's kind of related to it, but not the same thing. Basically, a non-fungible token is if you have it like a trading card or like a sort of program from a match, it's supposedly a sort of digital version of that. So if I've got a picture of a monkey, I can say I'm the only person in the world who has this monkey. So people liken it to sort of physical art, like, you know, the Mona Lisa, there's only one of them. There is a bit of a flaw in that argument though, which is that you can obviously like right click and save it, which you can't do on the Mona Lisa. But then you don't have the same sort of code which says I own this one monkey. So Reece James can prove I'm the person who owns this Bored Ape monkey for like tens or hundreds of thousands of pounds.
I understand, Joey, what you've said to me. It makes sense.
Well, I suppose instead of like sort of the technology aspect, I mean, it's basically a plaything for rich people, right? It's like if you've got more money than you know what to do with, you've got your fast car, you've got your expensive watch, you've got your expensive flat. Remember, these footballers are they don't have a lot of free time. They can't go on 3-day benders. Like, you know, if you're a rapper and you've got loads of money, I'm sure there's all sorts of crazy stuff you're doing. But footballers are kind of elite athletes. They spend half their lives like on a coach or, you know, in a hotel room somewhere. So they've got more money than they know what to do with. And this is kind of almost the latest kind of Rolex watch or Lamborghini thing. It's like, oh, I've just, you know, because I can, I've spent £50,000 on an NFT.
Joey, before we move on, I actually want to just play out a clip from Luke Franks, who's host of Welcome to the Metaverse, because in it, he actually referenced exactly what you say, which is about the Mona Lisa and this kind of unique element to NFTs and especially the apes, shall we say. So let's hear from Luke.
So the way that I like to describe why NFTs can have value is to think about why something is valuable in the normal physical world. So if you take the Mona Lisa, for example, why is that actually valuable? Well, it's not because of the materials that were used to create that piece. The canvas it's on isn't particularly valuable, or the dye in the paint. It's valuable for three reasons. One is that we can prove who created it, right? Leonardo da Vinci is one of the most famous artists of all time. We can also prove that he only made one of them. There's only one Mona Lisa in existence, and we can prove who owns it now. It's in the Louvre in Paris. So in other words, there's three things there. We can prove the creator, the scarcity of the piece, and the ownership now. And NFTs using this new type of technology called the blockchain enables this to happen for the first time ever for digital things. So we can now prove who creates something, the scarcity of a digital thing, and who owns it now, all on the blockchain for digital items. So that expands to a million different things. Art is one example, but it really affects every type of industry, including sports. So for example, if you found a youth player that was amazing, you thought they were great and nobody else did, and they had an NFT, I'm not talking about an art piece, but just something that represents them digitally. You could buy that. Maybe that has special access perks. Maybe you get a signed shirt and a chance to meet and greet the player. As that player's career explodes, suddenly that early NFT that you owned might become very, very valuable to somebody else. So it's a way of kind of potentially sharing the upside of somebody's success in that context, or a way of giving you kind of access for being an owner of that NFT and supporting that player, as one example. And this is all happening in a world that is trending rapidly towards a more and more digital existence. So the biggest companies in the world, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, all companies that don't have a product that you can hold, but a digital product, and they are worth billions of dollars. So really, NFTs give you the chance to own digital assets yourself outright without the involvement of any sort of company.
I think for me, the way I like to kind of imagine it is, anyone who was kind of on Facebook in its maybe early glory days, Farmville, when that was like a huge Facebook game, or people who play a lot of video games, you know, Fortnite has been huge over the last few years, also very popular with footballers. The skins, like the maps, I think they are, and the added products like weapons or whatever, you spend real money on those things, but they exist in a digital world.
I mean, I don't play Fortnite, but if a skin, you can use it in the game, right? Whereas these things, there's no tangible use.
Yeah, if I pop on Microsoft Paint now and draw a monkey or an ape or whatever, and then if I text a footballer I know and say, look, I've got this, you pay me 20 grand. You can be the only person in the world that has that. What, can I not do that?
The thing is, it's not on the blockchain, which means these NFTs, you can prove that. Get it on the blockchain, then you're laughing.
It's the brand, isn't it? It's the latest fad that footballers and lots of people in the world are kind of attaching themselves onto. Or is it? Is there actually something intrinsically valuable? Because it is linked to cryptocurrencies, which, as controversial and unregulated as they are, do have potentially a value.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess no one knows the answer to that question, right? And lots of these people buy these as financial investments, and they bought them for £100 six months ago, and now they're worth 50,000, and they're hoping that they'll sell them for a million. But no one knows, and they could just crash dramatically. I mean, in the late 90s, I believe there was like a Beanie Baby bubble where, like, you know, the little Beanie Babies that you buy for like £10 in a toy shop.
Yeah.
There was this like craze about rare ones, and people were buying and selling them for like hundreds of thousands of millions.
Yeah,
of pounds.
I was on the fad, but never made any money. But I convinced my mum that we couldn't remove the tags. And one of our readers actually referenced the Beanie Baby craze in the comments. And I think there was some interesting comments as a whole about this, because lots of people are kind of referencing things in computer games or Beanie Babies to try and make sense of this, because you're combining the digital world and the real world, and that's hard for a lot of us to kind of make sense of.
What happened with the Beanie Baby thing, though, is it crashed spectacularly because people were buying, selling Beanie Babies for like £1 million, but there was actually no underlying kind of value to that. And if you buy and sell a Lamborghini, you know, you can use that, or a Rolex watch, or whereas with the Beanie Baby, the value was purely in the hype, and then it just. So cynical people think this is going to happen with NFTs, or, you know, they could go up and they could have these uses, like your very interesting listener just there. Although this could be very, very embarrassing for those players, basically, because, you know, if you're a rich person and you want to spend 50 grand on something stupid, like, fair enough. But the point is, they're pushing it to their followers, lots of whom won't have as much money and might be, you know, taking another mortgage on their house to buy a cartoon monkey. So I think there's a real danger there when this is promoted to a sort of mass audience.
One thing I found quite strange is that, like, Reece James's tweet, quite contrived the way it's written. Like, he hasn't wrote that. The messaging's quite weird, the way he's
and John Terry's
written.
As well.
John Terry's
seems similar.
I saw someone else, a celebrity, do a very similar
Eminem,
tweet this morning.
Jimmy Fallon, but Reese Witherspoon loves NFTs.
But it's the word. It's the word. Like,
it makes it seem like they're being paid to do it.
It makes it dodgy. To me, the wording of the tweets make it dodger.
So Reece James, I worked out, because you can kind of track the transactions on the blockchain. Reece James was gifted his. Which, you know, makes sense if you're trying to get hype for these. You give one to a footballer for free, they tweet it. I think it's got 750,000 followers. John Terry, I think, paid like 40 grand for his. But again, maybe he'll make double that in 2 weeks. Like, you know.
But I suppose what's worrying is that on Instagram and a lot of these platforms, if you are doing things where you're gifted or sponsored content or whatever, you would use a hashtag which would make it clear that this is advertising, or, you know, you're being paid for a brand partnership. Whereas I think what makes this murkier, and what you've detailed in the piece, is players like Reece James getting gifted these, And it sort of becomes like a bit like, and someone in the comments of the piece also referenced this, a pyramid scheme in some ways, because it's like, you know, you're trying to reach the heights of this footballer, but he's not even paid for this in some circumstances.
Yeah, and I suppose it's like, you know, the Beanie Babies, it's like everyone is desperate to sell it on to someone for more than they paid for it. And then eventually, like, you know, it's like musical chairs and the music stops. And then is someone holding this like worthless cartoon monkey? I mean, your guy who spoke there, who was very interesting, to be honest. And, you know, lots of the people who talk about this stuff are like weirdo anonymous trolls. So I respect the guy for trying to set it out in normal language. But I mean, he said, like, you know, imagine if you've got a footballer and then they do really well. And like, you know, okay, but, you know, if I like write kind of, you know, I don't know, Jadon Sancho on a piece of paper 4 years ago and then try, like, you need some kind of underlying like market there. And it does remind me of, you know, people who like NFTs won't like this, but Football Index, which is a company that I've done lots of reporting on, where they had these sort of shares for footballers. And, you know, for a while it all kind of worked. And again, you'd buy like, they always use the example of Jadon Sancho because he was this obscure youth player age 15. And then he obviously became a superstar, and so people bought Jadon Sancho for £1 a share and sold it for £12 a share. And that, like, in footballing terms, they were right, but the whole financial market was just like thin air. Even if you do kind of make footballing predictions in that way, it doesn't prove that. And people often say, like, oh, well, if the company collapses, I still have the NFT. And it's like, well, will that mean anything to anyone? A sort of, if I was earning what, you know, Reece James is earning, then maybe I'd think, you know, it's a few tens of thousands, I might just get one, see where it goes. But I think to most people, it's, you know, sums of money that are probably not the best place to be putting them.
And there's been a lot of pushback as well from fans and other people in the football community. And I think I tweeted something similar recently of the growing involvement of crypto companies and then NFTs at lots of different clubs. I think the club I support, QPR, recently launched one. Tobin Heath, big US player. Football Index FC. Tobin Heath, a big women's player, recently launched some weird NFT partnership. NWSL in the States has done a partnership with a cryptocurrency in the women's game. Watford, lots of Premier League clubs have big Bitcoin partnerships. But lots of fans are starting to push back a little bit because of the volatile nature of crypto. And you mentioned the piece how Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, had a picture of an NFT of Muhammad Ali and then kind of quickly changed it back, potentially because a lot of his followers were saying, we're not a fan of this.
Yeah, I mean, the comments underneath this are universally negative and people don't like it, people don't understand it. People feel suspicious that they're being sort of, you know, tricked or scammed or whatever. Interestingly, about an hour before we're recording this, the Treasury, the United Kingdom, put out an announcement saying that they're going to massively increase regulation on cryptocurrency adverts, which has been sort of, you know, a long time coming. And I've done a lot on a company called Socios, which sponsors Aston Villa, a bunch of other Premier League clubs, Leeds, Arsenal, Man City, selling crypto to fans without really explaining what they were. And there's been an advertising standards authority has slapped that down. And I think the kind of, you know, the net is kind of tightening on this stuff. It's like, it was a complete free-for-all for a while. And now I think, you know, it's not going to go away, but I think there will be much more rules in place. And if you're selling someone a kind of risky, volatile asset, then you've got to kind of say that's what it is. And, you know, people always say to me like, oh, do you think like, you know, this stuff should be banned? Or do you think, should I do it? And it's kind of like, you know, if you want to like spend your money on what you want, like, I'm not telling you not to buy cryptocurrency or NFTs, but like, I just think, people should know what they are, which is risky assets, and that you might lose your money.
I think let's go to a break before my head explodes. You are listening to the Athletic Football Podcast, and when we come back, we're going to talk about John Terry's involvement, the Ape Kids Club, and if what we're really dealing with here is more cult than new tech. So stay with us.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
So if you're still skeptical about this stuff, I understand why. But also, if somebody 10 or 15 years ago had said to you that you'd be spending upwards of 4, 5, 6 hours a day on your phone, living kind of digitally, right? Texting your friends or having a work meeting on Zoom or sharing your life on Facebook or Instagram, you probably wouldn't have believed them. That sounded really alien and like that would never happen. And that's the same for all new technology when it first arrives. So when the internet came, people didn't understand it. Why would anybody need a mobile phone? We have landlines. Even when cars were invented initially, people were scared of going that fast. They thought that they wouldn't survive and all these things. So when things sound strange and different, that is often where the biggest opportunity is. And the evidence is already there. So last year on OpenSea, the most popular secondary trading marketplace for NFTs, they did almost $20 billion of volume traded. About $200 million a day gets traded of this stuff. That doesn't mean all of it is good and a lot of it won't survive. But the technology underneath this stuff is fundamentally game changing, and it's putting the power in the hands of us versus other companies. If you post a picture on Instagram and it gets some likes, look great, but you don't get any value from that. Instagram own that platform and they get all of the ad revenue on that. NFTs give you the ownership and give you a chance to actually own the future of this digital space. So I'd say there's a massive opportunity to learn about this stuff and still be really early on it.
That was another clip from Luke Franks, their host of the podcast Welcome to the Metaverse. Some big comparisons made by Luke. I can kind of understand, and this is obviously why crypto and other things are really popular, the sort of growing mistrust with banks, authority, governments, those that hold power, and a growing need and want for independence and being in control and knowing where your money lies. I completely can relate to that in many ways, but it still also feels almost just as sort of mad to then put your money into another potentially untrustworthy hands.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And I think, you know, it's obviously true that in 10 years we'll be using technology that we can't even like fathom now. But I suppose, you know, if you look further back and told someone about WhatsApp 15 years ago, maybe you'd think, okay, I get that, being able to message people, but easier. It's like the telephone, but better, isn't it? Also, I think you've got to always think of these things like, where's the money coming from? Like, you know, Instagram is making loads of money because it's selling adverts to people who like enjoy using its product. Whereas like, if you're making £1 million on an NFT, you're selling that to someone else. You know, someone else is paying you for that. And why are they paying you for that? Like, is it because they want to sell it to someone else later or because they want to like keep it? You know, just to me, this has all the hallmarks of a bubble, but maybe I'll be wrong and look very silly while all these people are on their private islands and I'll be, you know, being snarky about them in 10 years.
And let's talk about John Terry specifically then, because we talked about, when we've talked about the coronavirus vaccine and how the uptake had been a little bit slow among footballers, we talked about how footballers in the dressing room can influence each other in big ways. You know, if one person starts to do something, if one person starts drinking turmeric shots, the whole dressing room might be drinking turmeric shots. And it seems like NFTs could have the same potential. John Terry seemed to be one of the first-ish big names in English football to really go heavy on it and spend his own money on it. And now it seems like there's going to be a lot more in the coming days, and Reece James and Trent Alexander-Arnold, and it's becoming a bit of a fad. I mean, why do you think? Is it just because they're rich?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's both those things. There's lots of rich people who aren't footballers who are into this. You know, I mentioned Eminem, Reese Witherspoon, Jimmy Fallon, loads of NFL and NBA players. You know, Brozovic in Inter Milan, he loves them. So I did this piece with Adam Crafton, a regular on your show, which I should have mentioned much earlier. And we spoke to a couple of people kind of who, you know, in dressing rooms, in agents, who say that, yeah, footballers, you know, kind of often move as herds. They listen to the same music, which is kind of, I guess, normal for any bunch of people who work very closely together. But it means, particularly with these sort of financial decisions, or, you know, it's a very kind of unique world, isn't it? Of people earning that much money at a young age, you know, your friends from school aren't going to really identify. So it means that these trends can pick on very quickly. And it's the same with like anti-vax or all sorts of other things. It's a very small world and they spend so much time with each other. But there's, you know, various reports within clubs of, I think also like footballers attract these sort of hangers-on sometimes, and sort of vultures and people who, you know, maybe someone they've known for a long time, and then suddenly one of your mates from school is earning, you know, obscene amounts of money, or people that try and sell them things later. I remember, is it Daniel Sturridge did a really weird tweet a while ago about like finding a barber. Then he was like, oh, everyone's trying to scam me. And it was, you're kind of laughing at it. And then you kind of think, actually, you know, here's like a young man who's like incredibly talented, has been earning loads of money, more than you knew what to do with at a young age. And then probably all these people are trying to like fleece you. Simultaneously, you have obscene amounts of it. And secondly, you don't want to be getting ripped off, and you're kind of trusting strange people to kind of make big financial decisions for you. So their relationship with money is quite odd a lot of the time to normal people.
John Terry's involved in something called Ape Kids Club, and you just sent me the link whilst we were doing this podcast, so I've gone on it. First of all, it sounds like somewhere where you'd leave your kids when you go on holiday. Second thing, you go on the website and it just looks like a scene from Dumbo. What is Ape Kids Club, and why is John Terry involved in that? Because he feels like a weird person to be involved in it to me, because he's not a young footballer. He's trying to become a manager. You know, if you're looking for a football manager at the moment as an owner of a football club, and you say John Terry's involved in something like this, this isn't going to make me think, oh, he's the right guy to come into my club. It's weird.
It's so weird. And yeah, so it's 9,999 baby apes. So these are each NFTs of apes that are being sold by their baby. And the whole website is, you know, apekidsclub.io, if you want to have a look at it, if you're listening. I mean, it's clearly aimed at like a 7-year-old. Yeah. And there's, you know, is it a great, you know, combining 7-year-olds and volatile financial assets that cost thousands of pounds? I mean,
and are they actually linked to the apes that John Terry and Rhys James have? Are they like supposed to be the children of those big apes?
Yeah, I don't know if they're like formally linked, but it's kind of a spin-off, because they made these bored apes are the famous ones, and they're so expensive now, they're like tens of thousands of pounds, so they're all sort of spin-off projects. But another really weird thing about this is there's no, like, you know, if you look at a company, you scroll to the bottom, you see like their address, you can see the name of the CEO, you know, if there was any like legal issues or whatever, you know, who you'd refer. Here, there's nothing. It's all anonymous.
Yeah, well, just now I tried to click on the terms and conditions, and it just takes you back to the top of the homepage.
It looks like a kid's storybook. And then I'm sat here with the website in front of me, and then this weird monkey just pops up in the screen. He's like looking at me really bizarrely. Honestly, and I keep saying it, and everyone's going to be fed up with me listening to this pod. This is a weird, weird world.
Well, so another thing that I always find when I look into this stuff is, like, I guess I know quite a lot about it. And then I come across kind of, you know, I won't read out this stuff, but just jargon-filled stuff in the terms and conditions. And everyone looks at it and thinks, oh, I don't understand it. And the reason, I think, is often there's not anything there. It's just trying to, like, bamboozle people and sort of almost, they want you to think that it's all far too confusing and you're too, oh, you're not with the times and there's all this, you know, technical stuff that all the kids are doing. But actually, it's just, like, jargon babble to almost throw people off the scent, because if you did people what it really was, they would just be like, this is so obviously ridiculous.
There's something here explaining what it is. It's a storyline. I'm just going to read it. It says, in a magical world where apes ruled the metaverse, a magical 1,000-year-old tree sprouted cute baby apes. A flock of storks were the loyal companions of the 1,000-year-old tree.
So that's like a storyline to give your ape value.
But an adult, John Terry can't be sat at home, read that and think, that's tempted me in that story. Like,
yeah, I think this is incredibly weird, because obviously no one should be marketing NFTs at actual children. And that's what appears to be going on here.
But do you think, Joey, having done a lot of investigations now on similar things, you mentioned Football Index and already examples where football clubs, football players have been burnt from schemes like this. So do you think Premier League, other sort of authorities within the sport are starting to get a little bit nervous? And you mentioned the UK Treasury and rules on advertising and things like that. Do you think they are getting a bit nervous about the partnerships that clubs and players are entering into, or you think they just don't care?
I think they do care. I mean, I did a story about Norwich. I don't know if you did this on the pod, but this betting company, and it turned out the people, basically hardcore porn-like influencers were, which obviously for like the family club of Delia Smith is not good PR, and that was like a huge PR disaster, and they cancelled it, and then they got another sponsorship really quickly. But obviously that was just like hugely embarrassing, and I'm sure everyone at the club regretted it. But I think that's quite an extreme example, because it's so like tangible to people, like, this is obviously not what we want on like kids football shirts. But I think yes, beer like clubs don't want to be associated with dubious stuff, but also there's this just relentless desire for money in football, to pay players wages which are constantly increasing, and, you know, to kind of break the, you know, the upper few spaces, which are clubs funded by oil money. And if you're, you know, everyone just wants to be earning and spending as much money as possible. And if you take the moral standpoint and reject like 2, 3, 5 million pounds, then, you know, great, you're the upstanding people, but you've also probably not been able to sign a striker that you need on loan in the transfer window. So, like, you know, these two things are connected. Like, sponsorship revenue means stuff on the pitch. It means improving your stadium. So, like, I kind of, you know, I've spoken to people inside football clubs about this, and, like, you know, some of them feel slightly embarrassed about it, but, like, football clubs should have a moral position on sponsorships, and they do conduct due diligence, but also it's kind of on the government, right, to like ban things that are really bad for people. And that's kind of happened with, you know, you can't advertise tobacco on football shirts anymore. And if people deem that, so I'm not saying everything crypto related like shouldn't be advertised on football, but if something is looks like it could be really harmful to people, then I suppose it's not really on some commercial director to understand the intricacies of, you know, blockchain technology. That stuff should be going on at a higher level.
Am I going to say a baby ape on a football shirt at some point in the near future?
Well,
I mean, you had Angry Birds on Everton's sleeve.
Yeah, well, that was legit, right? So, that was a fun game.
Angry Birds is a game.
I will never forget the mock-up of Theo Walcott as an Angry Bird. It was uncanny. It was incredible design. I think one of the good things, I think, actually, about the comment section of this piece, and it's rare, I think, you find this in a comment section.
Yeah, it's great, actually.
Really good back and forth. Often it is carnage and there's, like, you know, people just laying in for no reason. But actually, the comment sections on this piece, and I would really encourage everyone to go there, really interesting. A lot of people who, you know, are obviously sceptical, a lot of people who are really interested, some people who even own crypto sort of chipping in with their own thoughts. And our producer Jonas has picked out a few as well for us to kind of specifically focus on. One subscriber's talked about it being a cult and not technology, which I suppose is probably a little bit concerning when you kind of use that sort of language, isn't it?
I can see why people would use the word cult. I mean, you know, I think a big thing with every sort of crypto product is everyone wants to big up the value of it, right? So like, you know, if you own this ape that you bought for 40 grand and you want to sell it for more, if anyone tells you, oh, it's a load of junk, like, you get really angry about that. And so there's a lot of kind of aggression around, you know, this is brilliant, it's going to go up, it's going to go to the moon, little rocket emojis to the moon. It's like a real part of the whole crypto thing. It's like, because you want to sell it to someone for more than you bought it for. So it can feel a bit cultish at times.
And I think there's another subscriber, Tom F, he writes, if you want to go real Black Mirror, what if these NFTs are the new passports to virtual spaces, corridors of power, or entire universes? They define the newest societal structures in the metaverse. Of course, that's far-fetched, but a decentralized world is an ideal plan. There are a few people who sort of wrote similar things in the comments about positive thoughts about the potential of this. Someone was talking about concert tickets and kind of getting and stopping touting and things like that. So there's people who have quite hopeful desires for what NFTs and could lead to. But in reality, Joey, it doesn't seem like that's actually the end goal for a lot of these things.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, the metaverse and blockchain and all these things that feel really kind of pie in the sky now are going to be big in the coming years. And I think it's very unpredictable to say exactly how. But I think the point, though, is with these cartoon monkeys is like, what can it actually do? You know, you can use blockchain technology, for example, in contracts. And if you have different people in different countries, like proving that signatures from two directions, and it all gets very technical. But I think there are real uses for this stuff. But I think I'm not sure this is it. I don't see what the point of the monkey is. And I've, you know, been trying very hard to work that out for quite a few weeks. I think also this is a really like basic point, which I kind of almost thought I was too stupid when I thought this. And now I've kind of read more and it's true. If you buy the Mona Lisa, right? That's a real thing you can touch. And you can have like a really highly produced copy of it and I can put it on my wall and it can look the same, but it's not the Mona Lisa because like Leonardo da Vinci did not paint the thing on my wall. If you have an NFT and I right click it and have it, it is the same thing. The NFT is simply like a link, like a code which directs you to the picture. A good analogy is like a treasure map, right? If I have a treasure map and it's a unique treasure map and it tells me the treasure is like at the end of my garden, but it could be that in 10 years time, the like treasure moves. And that's kind of like an NFT. Like I have a hyperlink which like points somewhere. And so you can have like a dead link on the internet, but the actual picture could like move. And the picture doesn't exist on the NFT. Does any of that make sense? I don't know if it does.
But obviously, you know, Da Vinci has made that. So that's a one-off. You know, someone well-known has done that. This monkey is made by some lad in his basement, I'm presuming. We don't know who it is that's done that.
Well, so these things are often made by like digital artists who in that very specific world are quite well known. But, you know, had anyone heard of them 2 years ago? Maybe not. But I think the difference is Da Vinci. There's like 500 years of history there that shows that it's valuable. And like in 100 years time, can I predict the value of the Mona Lisa? No. But can I predict that it'll probably be pretty valuable, as will like a Van Gogh or something? Yes, I think so, because that's kind of the like society values these pieces of art and their reference in literature. And like, whereas will these apes by these digital artists that have just cropped up still be worth money in 100 years? Like maybe, but I wouldn't put any money on it. So, like, I think that it gets kind of like quite philosophical at this point, but like, the value of physical art is really underpinned by it's in a lot of people's heads as being a thing, which makes it quite hard to just vanish overnight. But I don't know, this could vanish overnight.
I might buy one for a laugh, really cheap.
Yeah, like, well, I was going to ask you, Dan, before we wrap up with Joey, I want to ask you, doesn't sound like you're into the purchasing a monkey, but
probably
would
not.
You be interested in purchasing an Aston Villa NFT?
No.
I mean, it's certainly not going away. I see most clubs, most footballers getting involved in this space at the moment. So I'm sure we're going to be chatting to you again about it very soon, Joey. Thank you so much for coming on and talking about your piece.
Thanks for having me.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Well, I hope we don't chat about it again today. Yeah.
I would love if a week later Dan's like, hey cool kids, this new thing. Because the language is always so like, hello fellow kids. It's so like...
Thanks ever so much again to Joey. Just before we go, let's pick up again the Charlie Eccleshear's piece. Earlier we were talking about all the COVID postponements, Flo. It's just... I feel like we're at the point now where we should be drawing a line under it and it shouldn't really be happening at this stage.
Yeah, I think that North London derby postponement really kind of
a little bit.
It turned things from what had been a quite nervous December period, I think, for a lot of us, fans, the general public. And I think we had felt perhaps some more empathy towards players and clubs who were going through the same thing and experiencing COVID cases and worrying about their health and players, et cetera, et cetera. But it feels like the last couple of weeks, things have flipped a little bit. And I think fans and managers especially, I've seen it in the WSL and the Premier League talking about transparency. I think they're feeling like people are exploiting the rules to suit them. And when they don't have a fully fit squad because of other reasons or have players that are playing in the African Cup of Nations or have loaned out players or sold players this window, they're sort of potentially exploiting the rules a little bit to suit them in order to get games postponed. And I think that's what, Charlie mentioned a lot in the piece is, I think that the thing really shifted at the weekend with the postponement of the Arsenal-Spurs game. Became a little bit more toxic than it had in the previous weeks. And now, especially on Twitter, people are pretty angry at the way that game was postponed. And Charlie mentioned in his piece how Spurs were incandescent, which is one hell of a word. I love that word. Daniel Levy especially is said to have been absolutely enraged because they were ready to play that game, probably felt quite confident going into it, their chances of winning it. And the game gets called off, and now when it's rescheduled, Arsenal may have a fully fit squad again.
Yeah, under-23s games being played on the same day as first team games have been postponed as well. I don't think that's on really.
And teams also putting squads out in the FA Cup. The FA were very clear at the FA Cup weekend that they had to go ahead those games, and they were unless you had a serious lack of players in your academy and under-23s or whatever, those games are going to go ahead. And I think what that's shown is that you can make it work. And obviously, we know there's a lot at stake in the Premier League. If you get relegated, you could potentially lose a whole lot of money. But at the same time, I think it just leaves a bit of a nasty taste in the mouth. People feel like they're being made to look like fools,
Correct me if I'm wrong here, but Xhaka gets sent off. So they're another player down Arsenal.
Mm.
You can't just say if he was the one, they needed one more player to be able to field a team and get the game. Well, that doesn't feel right either, that because someone's got sent off in the last game, you can call your game off. That doesn't really sit well either.
Yeah, and I think transparency is the big one, really. And I know people have been talking about all weekend on the radio, TV, podcasts about the rules. I mean, the rules are there, so clubs are allowed to use them as they wish because they're the rules that the Premier League's come up with. But the rules aren't particularly concrete. They're quite wishy-washy. You can kind of look and the language they use around appropriate under-23 players, essentially, you know, that's quite vague. And you could say, oh well, this, you know, Charlie Patino's played what, 2 senior games, he's not the right, he doesn't qualify, whereas, you know, some would argue he does. So it is quite sort of unclear, and that just opens up loopholes.
Yeah, do check out Charlie's piece if you haven't done so already, and I'll give a shout out to the Everton reporters as well, because there's been some great content around Rafa Benitez getting the sack and what's going on at Everton at the moment as well, so do check out their stuff as well.
And a final reminder from me that you can read every article we've mentioned and so much more by signing up to The Athletic. Save 33% on a full subscription today by visiting theathletic.com/footballpod.
Thanks to you as always, Flo, and our thanks goes to Joey as well. And of course, thank you to all of you for listening. Do get involved in the comments, some great comments this week. We'd love to hear your thoughts, and wherever you get your podcasts, if you're enjoying the show, then please leave us a review too. This was The Athletic Football Podcast. Mark Chapman and Max Slater reconvene to discuss the business of sport tomorrow. You wouldn't hear them talking about cartoon monkeys, that falls to me and Flo, but hopefully you will join us again.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.